You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
You're listening to the Stable Management Podcast, where we discuss the barn management topics that you're passionate about.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Stable Management Podcast. Our goal is to bring you a real-world look into the parts of horse farm management that you love or hate most, such as stall bedding, farm equipment, and pasture maintenance. During each bi-monthly episode, we'll be joined by an expert guest who shares their experiences with and perspectives on an important stable management topic. Running a barn means you're responsible for a lot more than feeding charts and turnout schedules. You're managing horse health, communication, inventory, and the daily details that keep everything running smoothly. Chewy helps simplify one of the biggest parts of that job, keeping your barn stocked with the products your horses depend on. Chewy carries the brands you trust for feed, supplements, fly control, grooming, and everyday barn essentials, and delivers them fast. And it doesn't stop with the horses. You can stock up on supplies for your dogs, barn cats, goat companions, and even chickens, all in the same order. With free shipping on orders over $49, restocking is straightforward and predictable. No extra trips to the store, no added stress. When your plate is full, Chewy helps you stay focused on what matters most, the critters in your care. For life with horses, there's Chewy. Start shopping for your barn at chewy.com/equine. I'm your host, Haley Peffer, and my guest today is Dr. Anne Marie Skiffington from Ocean State Equine Associates. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm very excited to talk about senior horse stuff.
Yes. So our topic today is something that I think all of our readers deal with as our horses age. It's unfortunately something that we all have to think about. So could you just start by telling us what we actually mean when we say a horse is senior, and what does this mean from a management standpoint and also from the veterinary standpoint?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple different ways you can talk about senior horses at this point. There's the chronologically definition, so like age related, so 18 plus is kind of considered senior horses now. And then I think what we kind of forget about is kind of like their physiological definition, because you have some horses that are 18 that act 4 years old. You have some horses that are 30 years old that act 30. And then you have like the 30 year olds that act like mid-teens. So I think what senior definition now is kind of like your actual age and how the horse actually is. And I think it's very dependent on each horse in general, how we want to start adjusting care. I think an old 30-year-old that acts 30, we're going to treat them different than kind of like your 18-year-olds, where I feel like right now, like 18s, like 15 to 18s, some horses are coming into their prime and it's like the best years of their life. So we kind of just take it day by day or year by year with these guys. But no matter what, I think having a good relationship with your vet in general is great. And a lot of times, a lot of things can be caught on like the annual vaccines or wellness exams. Older horses, like probably like your 20 plus or 25 plus, maybe biannual exams just to kind of stay on top of everything. But yeah, so I think like once you kind of get to like the 20s, maybe start adjusting care, of course, unless something else is going on that you're like suspecting, oh, they're kind of slowing down in this. But probably like around that age, I would probably start adjusting some of their stuff, like diet if needed. But yeah, at least having like a yearly exam with these older guys is perfect. And that'll just like entail like physicals, blood work. Do they need a lameness evaluation? Definitely dental exams and basically diet evaluations, because they like to change up some things when they get older. Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, I think I have a miniature horse who's turning 16 this year. So I know she's has plenty of life left in her. But I, of course, am starting to worry about metabolic issues because she's kind of hitting that age for PPID. Yeah. And my vet's like, stop looking at the calendar. Like, let's look at the horse.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, I would say like our oldest horse in the practice is a mini horse, and I think he's like 45 this year. Oh, of course, he has like his own issues, but he is a champ. And he's on a lot of medications, but he's really cool. But yeah, I mean, I think it's like listening to your horse too. Like owners know their horse is the best. So they're going to know like the more subtle changes. And if we see him once a year, I mean, hopefully we see him once or twice a year and we don't have to come out for emergencies, but I love seeing some of these older guys once a year because I know they're doing great.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that leads me into the common health issues that we see in older horses. Obviously, like metabolic concerns might be one in some, but are there others that we tend to overlook or just some that we should be more aware of?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it right with the metabolic conditions. As everybody gets older, even humans, like things start slowing down. Of course, we have PPID or Cushing's that it was formerly known as, which is a endocrine disorder, kind of like a tumor in the pituitary gland. So that can kind of wreak havoc in these horses, mainly like their immune system can get compromised. And of course, if they're overweight, you worry about like their insulin. And then of course the dreaded L word, laminitis. So we like to keep that in check, and it's never wrong to do kind of like screening exams just to kind of stay on top of it. So metabolic is one of our biggest ones we worry about with the older horses. I think kind of like coming more into the light now, since medicine always changes, I think dental disease is a very big one with these older guys. And I think we'll be talking about it a little bit more later, but I mean, that can relate to a lot of things like their weight loss. If they have horrible teeth, they're more prone for colon impaction just because they can't utilize their hay as well. Of course, you get like the tooth root abscesses and chokes, horses that can't eat properly or whatever. That's like another big reason why they do chokes. But I think dental disease is a very big one that we're being a little bit more aggressive with later in life. Where I know when I was a kid, the teeth get done once a year and good luck to us. But now I think now like we're really, it's probably like the prime of like the dental stuff, and it's really cool, like all the things. And we have like boarded dental specialists and stuff, which is incredible. There's not many in the country. We're fortunate to have one locally, so we're very on top of like our dental stuff here. I think another one too is kind of like your generalized arthritis in these older guys, especially if they've had like a hard life previously. Horses are starting to live longer, so we're starting to see more arthritis things going on with these guys. So this is like a whole different management thing, whether it's injections or like daily non-steroidals. We kind of talk about that too later if we need to. But I would say those are probably my big three things I deal with the senior guys. But yeah, and I think weight loss is a bit an interesting one, because sometimes it can be weight loss, and a lot of times it's just like muscle mass loss because they're just not doing anything because people think they're older, they can't be used. I don't believe that. If I think if a horse is fit and comfy, I think older horses should be ridden because I think it's better for them to keep moving and be happy. But yeah, those are my big three ones for older horses.
So a question that we often get is there really anything that you would consider to be like normal aging? So could you tell us if that's something that you consider to be a real consideration? And then also, how can barn managers distinguish between those like normal changes and signs that there might be actually a more serious problem going on?
Yeah, so I think that's like a tough question because I never really thought about it, because I think I've always had like the science mind of this one. I think ultimately owners know their horses better than anybody else. They're around them typically daily, and they will catch like the more subtle signs, which might not be a problem for us, but they're like, oh, they're normally like running out of their pasture or like out of their stall to go to their pasture. Now they're just walking. Why are they doing that? So, I mean, of course we all are going to get older age. We're going to have arthritis. Is that what's going on with the horse? Or are they just like slowing down? Like they just don't need to be fresh anymore. And I do think like some of the big things that owners kind of notice the first things with the horses, I would say weight loss is a big one. And like I said before, sometimes the weight loss is truly just muscle loss. Like they're just not doing anything, which can be normal. Like, I mean, if we're not working out, we're not building muscle or anything. Same thing with the horses. So that can just be a normal age-related changes. It makes people nervous because they're like, oh, they used to look like this and now they're looking like this. So I think that's a big one. And it's kind of like reassuring. You can be like, oh, it's just muscle mass. I'm like, if we put them back in work, maybe that'll change. I think coat conditions are another very interesting one. Of course, horses are going to have, most horses, I would say, have long coats in the winter, short in the summer. But kind of when that stops changing, or like they're just not shedding out as well, then that's a problem, because then we're start thinking about PPID or Cushing's. And then I think another big one, changes in the attitude, like I said before, like some horses fresher and younger in life, and then they kind of slow down and later in life, which can be completely normal. Or is something else going on? Like they can't run because they're sore somewhere. Are they lame? Do they have arthritis? Can they not see as well? Like, are they nervous about walking in a field and they can't see like shadows and all that stuff? But I think ultimately it comes down to the owners knowing their horses better than anyone. And if they have like a subtle sign, it never hurts to ring your vet, but like a lot of times they're probably going to tell you just monitor it and it'll be okay. And it's just horses getting older, you know?
Yeah, I think most horse owners are very quick to stress out a little bit about our horses.
Yes. Yeah, and I get it. I mean, I don't have horses right now, but I did it with my dog and I was like, is this normal? I mean, and I'm a vet, so like I should know. I'm like, I don't know. I'm just going to call the vet. I can't deal with this.
I get that.
And they tell me I'm nuts and then I'm like, okay, I'll talk to you later.
Now you understand the side of the client too.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, my dog was very humbling for me being a vet because I'm like, oh my God, is this how owners feel? I'm like, I get it now. You know, it's a reassuring moment for me. And it brings me back. I was like, I am an owner too as well. So just a different side.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm sure you can relate to your clients a lot better in that way.
Oh yeah, definitely. Because I mean, and they say it, like, you cannot think straight when it's your own animal. You really can't. Yeah. So I learned that.
Running a barn means you're responsible for a lot more than feeding charts and turnout schedules. You're managing horse health, communication, inventory, and the daily details that keep everything running smoothly. Chewy helps simplify one of the biggest parts of that job, keeping your barn stocked with the products your horses depend on. Chewy carries the brands you trust for feed, supplements, fly control, grooming, and everyday barn essentials, and delivers them fast. And it doesn't stop with the horses. You can stock up on supplies for your dogs, barn cats, goat companions, and even chickens, all in the same order. With free shipping on orders over $49, restocking is straightforward and predictable. No extra trips to the store, no added stress. When your plate is full, Chewy helps you stay focused on what matters most, the critters in your care. For life with horses, there's Chewy. Start shopping for your barn at chewy.com/equine. Is there a major mistake that you see people making most often when it comes to feeding these senior horses, or do you have any advice for feeding them appropriately?
Oh yeah, this could probably be a talk all in itself. I think senior horses do need a little bit more different care, and I think some owners just don't realize this. So with aging horses, I think we're really fortunate now because there's 1,017 different brains out there for all different walks of life. And we have a ton of senior grains now. So I think the biggest thing with the weight loss and all that stuff or muscle loss is not feeding an easy digestible or palatable grain. A lot of the senior grains will kind of like disintegrate with like very barely any water or like saliva, basically. So if the horses can't chew it, can't utilize it, they're going to lose weight. Same thing with the hay. Hay is a very interesting thing with some senior horses. Of course, like this comes back to like the dental topic. If horses don't have good teeth, they're not able to utilize the hay as well. And so they're going to lose weight from that as well. And then that just turns into like, it's going to be a choking hazard. If they're quitting their hay, they're going to be dropping it. They're going to be swallowing big clumps, choking. They're supposed to be able to grind that stuff up and make it have so much surface area so their entire body can utilize everything. When they can't chew properly, that's not going to happen. This also increases the risk of like your large colon impactions, which that's not fun at all. So I think by correcting some of that stuff, whether you do like your soaked cubes, because those are like short stem fiber, soaked being the key word, because that's again, another choking hazard, but they'll be able to utilize that. They don't have to chew it as well. Or dengi hay, which is kind of like another short stem fiber. And that's pretty soft. And then of course, like with our senior only grains, those can be the only thing in their diet as well. You just have to feed it appropriately. Horses shouldn't get any more than 5 pounds of grain in any one meal. So like if some horse has to be on like, for instance, 15 pounds, you got to split that up into multiple feedings. Also, they are grazers. So you want something in their stomach all the time to prevent like ulcers and all that stuff. And their bile acids, this secretion is 24/7. They don't have a gallbladder. They don't have a way to store it. But I think we're fortunate because we do definitely have horses just on senior only grain, and they look incredible. Like, their weight's beautiful. They don't colic. But I think just trying to figure out when to switch to senior if they need to. A lot of them have high fat, high protein. But yeah, I think just that diet, we're very fortunate to have, like I said, 1,017 different grains that we can kind of pick from. And of course, like with the metabolic horses, we're worrying about different percentages of, like, of your non-structural carbohydrates. So there's plenty of senior grains that go kind of like in that spectrum for the percentage. Of course, is like balancers, like, and then you're gonna have some senior horses that don't really need to see adjust the diet. Like, their teeth are great and they look great. We just want to make sure they're getting the optimal use out of their grain and hay. So yeah, that's a really good, really good topic to talk about.
It's funny that you mentioned all the options, because I'm pretty sure that just about every time I go to the feed store, I see a new senior horse feed of some sort. And I'm like, well, maybe I should be thinking about this one.
I overthink them. Yeah. And it's funny when owners ask me, like, oh, I'm on this. I was like, okay, I'm going to do what everybody else does right now is Google them, which I say don't do. But it's just like, there's so many to keep track of. I'm like, I have no clue if this is safe, if this is ideal. So I literally have to like Google it to figure everything out, because there's a lot of them.
Oh yeah.
And then you have like the senior horses. I call it like, and it's typically like old geldings, like picky old man syndrome, where like, and this is infuriating for, I think, every single vet I know, is like, they'll love one grain one time, eat it for 2 weeks, and then just stop eating. And then you have to switch them, which is not ideal. And it's infuriating, but it's just sometimes you have to do that, and they become so picky later in life. I don't know why. It's infuriating. And I feel bad for everybody involved, because everybody's like, they're not eating. Are they colicking? Are they doing something else? Are they choked? Like, whatever. I was like, I think they're just being picky old man. And typically I was like, feed them something else and they gobble it up. Quick fix, but it's just, it's infuriating. And I can, and I will say 95% of the time it is a gelding. Not a mare.
That's that so does funny. That.
Yeah.
So you also mentioned the role of the dental care in basically any senior horse problem that we see. Mm-hmm. I think that might be the most common one that we hear about from readers. So could you tell us what you would ideally like a senior horse's dental care program to look like? And then just remind us of how that impacts their overall health and condition.
Yeah, definitely. So I think I've touched on a little bit of this, but for senior horses, depending, of course, on how their teeth are, I would at least recommend an annual exam. When I get my more seniors, I at least try to do twice a year dental exams. Not saying we have to do everything, every single exam. It's just nice to keep track of them and see how their teeth are looking. So horses' teeth are the hypsodon, so it means they continue to grow over a lifetime, but there is a finite amount of tooth in their head. So as time goes on, they wear away their teeth. And then eventually, if they do live long enough, they kind of expire their teeth. So like, they either go missing, they're loose, food can kind of pocket around that, they can fracture, they lose their grinding surface, like they can be very smooth. So I think kind of doing those exams, keeping on top of that to make sure, are we taking out painful teeth? Is anything changing? Do they have sharp enamel points? I think that is a really good way to kind of stay on top of it. Of course, some horses need like every 3 months to deal with some different things, but a lot can change in 6 months as well. And so typically, like if we go to like a senior horse and they're kind of like not eating, or they haven't, like that is like one of the first things we do at the exam is sedate and do a sedated oral exam to see if there's anything in there. Of course, there could be foreign bodies and stuff in there. But they love to lose their teeth later in life and they're pretty wiggly. That can be painful in itself, especially if they're eating. They can have root problems. So like if they have diseased roots, that just leads to like another source of infection. So like your tooth root abscesses, they get nasal discharge. Those horses need their teeth taken out. So then once you take out a tooth, their corresponding lower or upper tooth has nothing to grind on. So you have to stay on top of that to prevent like the overgrowth of the corresponding tooth. And then of course, as time goes on, different teeth kind of lose their grinding surface at different timings. So they can get a thing called a wave mouth. So some teeth are overgrown because their other ones are completely worn away, and like vice versa. So we like to try and keep them as comfy as possible, keep their mouths as comfy as possible and looking and feeling their best. And of course they can get all sorts of things in there. Like they're eating from the ground. They can get foreign bodies in there. They can definitely get ulcerations in there. The other thing that we're keeping an eye on are their incisors. As they can get older, they can get a disease called EOTRH. It's a very long word. It's equine odontoclastic tooth resorption and hypercementosis. So in layman's terms, it's basically it's like a destruction of your tooth surface or structure. And then they lay down abnormal cement like around their roots. This is incredibly painful for horses. And we typically see it in older, like probably like 15 plus horses, kind of like the beginning signs of it. All sorts of breeds can get it. But it is something we do keep a very close eye on because there's not really like a good treatment. The only treatment typically is to extract those incisors. And before everybody's like, oh my gosh, how do we do that? Like the horse, like quality of life. I'm like, I will tell you the horses that get their incisor, their diseased incisors taken out are a lot happier than having the painful teeth in them. Like they can survive without their incisors. They do great. They're very happy. A lot of horses hang their teeth. Their tongues out. So that looks really cute. So EOTRH is like another one that you could have like your own talk about, but that's something we're always staying on top of. We can x-ray everything to see how those are looking. But we do, and it's a really important, and that's like another big quality of life thing is if the EOTRH is not handled, I worry about their quality of life because it is that painful. Just imagine having like a toothache 24/7 for months and months and months at a time. And it's just like not fair to them to put them through that. I do think their teeth are obviously very important to the condition of the horse. Some of our oldest horses that I've seen like in our 40s, I am not kidding you, the ones that look like they're in their teens, their teeth are absolutely pristine that I have seen. They're absolutely incredible. I mean, we have the 40-year-old or the 30-year-olds that definitely look like they're in their 30s, and typically their mouths are not as happy. But the ones that are pretty ancient but look like they're not, their mouths have been so beautiful. And I don't know if that's just like good breeding or they're just lucky. I would say the older horses that we have had have all been like Arabians. I don't know if they hold the key to immortality in their teeth, but they are absolutely incredible. So I think teeth are just important for the condition of the horse. The better the teeth are, the better the management care is. I think the better and longer our horses are going to live, honestly. And I think we're starting to see that. Like, we definitely have horses in our 40s, which is incredible. Like, we used to think 20s, 25 are like kind of like, oh, this is it, but like not really anymore. Like, I still have a horse that's being fully worked at 31, and she didn't want to stop. I mean, she has other stuff going on now, but like, I think it's incredible that we're having these horses be older, and they're very cute when they get their little like gray crowns in their head and their forehead and stuff like that. So yeah, teeth are great and very important.
It's funny that you mentioned Arabians, because I grew up riding Arabians, and I swear we had so many ancient Arabians, and they all did very well and were happy being ridden and even showing a little bit.
Yeah, no, they're incredible. I mean, I know some people, they give them a bad rap, but they can be spicy, but they are awesome, and they can live for a very long time. Also, they have great feet, so...
Yeah.
I love them. I love it. Yeah, like, our oldest one was... He was a 43-year-old stallion, never bred or anything like that, but he was a really cool horse. And his teeth, I don't think I ever sedated him because he didn't need to be, but I could do everything without drugs. And I looked at his teeth and I was like, oh my gosh, I mean, beautiful. Like, it was like a 10-year-old mouth. It was beautiful. Incredible. Arabians are awesome.
They are cool. I might be biased, though.
Yeah, same.
So let's talk a little bit about endocrine problems. We mentioned them a little bit, but I think that's something that a lot of our readers are struggling with their horses, mm-hmm. honestly, of all ages. But I know they become more common as the horse ages. So could you tell us how we can manage those horses and balance treating them with also, you know, giving them some sort of quality of life, being able to be turned out and socialized and that sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, that is a big topic. So like our big metabolic things we're worrying about in these older horses, obviously our Cushing's are like PPID. We have some good testing for this. Of course, probably what I say now is going to change what we're going to hear about in 2 to 3 years, because that's just how it goes right now with the endocrine world. So you can definitely start testing them as early, I mean, probably late teens as you want. And I would say we have two different types of tests you can test for. They're both blood tests, your baseline ACTH, and then we have another more specific test called the TRH-STIM. That one catches like your more like subclinical signs. And so those are my go-to, like if it's a younger horse, I'm worried about it. Like, are they starting to get some weird things? I will jump to that. So it's just a baseline ACTH. You give the TRH, and then in 10 minutes, you just pull another blood draw. That's it. And then you kind of have like your little chart of values that are good, bad, in the equivocal range. And then kind of once we get that, we'll kind of adjust diet. A lot of times we're testing for PPID and insulin resistance at the same time, which again, there's a couple different tests you can do that. A lot of it is just blood draws, or you can do the glucose test where you give glucose and then you take blood at certain points and see how their body is responding. There are a lot of labs that are very specific for the insulin and metabolic stuff. I feel with the metabolic, a lot of things are diets because nobody wants to deal with laminitis. Like, you don't want to deal with it. The horse doesn't want to. We don't. But it is a big thing with these metabolic horses. And of course, metabolism slows down later in life too. So like some of these horses become a more easier keeper. So they're overweight and you're like, oh gosh. And so like, are they just overweight because you're feeding them too much? Or is there something else going on and we need to truly very much worry about it? Of course, you have like the breeds that are just easy keepers, like you save food and they just blow up and they're huge. Like your drafties are easy, like your drafty ponies, like your Fiorgia Halflingers, all that stuff. Morgans, I mean, you have like some breeds that are definitely more disposed to having like the metabolic issues. But as far as like management goes, I think at least knowing your baselines, especially with like spring and fall time, like my metabolic, like insulin resistant horses, those horses are not allowed to be on grass right now. The sugars are just so high. I'm sure we're going to have an uptick in laminitis and we all in the spring, and we always have an uptick in the fall as well because of that. It's just like the sugars are out of control. And especially if you have a horse that's kind of like teetering on it, on the verge of being insulin or high insulin, they're going to get laminitic, and I'd rather prevent it than have to deal with it. Of course, some farms are not set up that way. So like if you do have kind of like an easy keeper or anything like that, you can put them on a dry lot so they're not exposed to grass, but some farms, they just have grass fields. And with those horses, you can kind of adjust what times they go out on the fields for like when it's like the lowest sugar content. And I would definitely put them in grazing muzzles, as much as I think that's like a whole like controversy type of thing, but it really does reduce the amount of insulin. I mean, sugars they can get in the grass. And then there was a study that was, you have like lower insulin spikes the slower you eat. And it was like a very interesting topic to me because I never thought about it that way. So how fast it can intake kind of also helps with like regulation. And of course, like with your overweight horses, like the things we always kind of forget about, especially like when they're actively laminitic, is like to help with weight loss, to help like with metabolism, exercise them, even if you can't, even if you can't ride them, lunge them, do something, take them for hand walks, keep them in the moving, is not only good for their body and arthritis and all that stuff, but for weight and metabolism. And then they also have like a sense of purpose too. And it's really fun. I mean, I like working horses. But yeah. And I think as far as, of course, it's also owner management and compliance and stuff like that. It's a ton of what management we can do and what medications we can do and all that stuff. So having like a really good conversation with owners about diet changes in turnout or anything like that, once we do have a diagnosis, is really important. Like a lot of times I go to farms and I'm talking to them more than I'm working on the horse, just so we can kind of get a baseline. What can the owners do? What can they not do? how can I adapt it for the, we have the best outcome for that horse. And then like, you can also just talk about this regular too, like at your spring or fall wellness, stuff like that too. We can always talk about senior horse care. What can we change? What should we run? Or if there's something is like jumping out to me, I'm like, do we need to add anything in? Like, is there muscle loss because like they're not on grass and they need a vitamin E supplement? So do we need to run that? I always typically run vitamin E's as well, because I think that's another source for muscle loss, especially if we're not having these horses on the grass, which where they can get most of their vitamin E. So it's a lot of blood work and a lot of talking for your endocrine horses.
Definitely. Yeah.
Oh God. And I always want to like set people up for success, like not failure. Like no one's perfect. We all have lives. We all have jobs. So we need to set up what we can do for the best interest of the horse without setting the horse back, because you feel like you can't do everything for it. Like we can adapt, you can adapt, we can get through it together. So like owner compliance is a big one as well with these senior horses.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, even with my two minis that, you know, live at home with my parents, they actually live at their house. So my parents will help me out with some of it, but we spend a little while, you know, looking at everyone's schedules. Okay. What can we do? Mm-hmm. They're on a dry lot, but obviously, you know, they need something to be moving through their system. So it took us a little while of playing around with how we were feeding them, but we were able to work something out that, you know, worked with everybody working full time.
Yeah,
definitely doable. You just have to get creative.
Yes. Yeah. I actually love like problem solving for people. And I was like, can we do that? They're like, no. I'm like, all right, then we'll just try something else.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a tough one, especially like when people have like weird schedules and stuff. It's just so tough, especially then like if you start like medications and everything has to be timed. I'm like, this has to be given here. This has to be given here. I was like, I'm sorry, like it stinks, but if you can't do it, like no one's perfect. We're gonna try and do the best that we can right now.
Yeah,
yeah, it's tough.
So my last question for you today is about end of life decisions, which is unfortunately something that we all have to think about. And personally, I always want to think about this before I'm in a dire situation where a quick decision needs to be made. So could you tell people who are planning for this what factors they should be thinking about to ensure they're prioritizing their horse's quality of life?
Yeah, I think this is a really good and tough question to answer, but I think it's one that needs to be answered. And I have this talk with a lot of owners, especially like senior horse owners. Kind of some of the big things, obviously, it's like quality of life for the horse. And I think that's going to be very dependent on each horse individually. And so when I have this conversation, I think it's very important for owners to understand, like, we are here for you and the horse. And so don't feel like self-conscious about bringing this up with them, even though if the horse is like in a good place about having this conversation, because the more you can plan, the better the outcome can be, whether that's like treatment or unfortunately like humane euthanasia. So I just want owners to understand that, especially with me, like there is no judgment on me. And I always say I'd rather have a horse go a week too early than a day too late. Nobody wants to make these decisions during a very stressful situation, which of course, unfortunately, that is part of this whole ownership and all that stuff. Like we still have to make those tough decisions, but if we can kind of plan for them, I think that's a better way to be, especially with these senior horses. So as far as like a quality of life talk with owners and the senior horse, I think it's very important for owners to honestly make a list of important qualities that they think contribute to the good quality of life for their horse at question. If you're going to have a spicy horse, even spicy later in life, and they're going to have to be on stall rest for the rest of their life for whatever reason, is that something that you can live with and the horse can live with? I don't know. Like, you know the horse, I know the horse. I mean, you know them better, but like, is that a good quality of life for that horse? So I think coming up kind of with a list of things that are important to you and the horse is very important, because like this is like essentially why they should be alive and still around. And then so after that, if we're thinking about their quality of life, I also have owners make a calendar for their horses. and saying, is this a good day or a bad day for the horse? Once they start having more bad days than good days, I think this is a very important time to have that conversation about quality of life. Ultimately, it comes down a lot of times to like chronic pain. I don't think a horse that is walking lame has a good quality of life. Like if you can't even walk comfortable, I don't like keeping them around because they can't talk to us. But like also I'm an advocate for these horses. And so if they can't walk sound, I have a really tough conversation with the owner about the horse and like, what can we do? Of course, like we can put them on medications, and if they're starting to be more comfy and sprightly, then we just kind of pivot. It's completely fine. And a lot of this is just like pivoting, see what we can make comfy and all that stuff like that. But like, we do have horses that have kind of like the chronic painful eye conditions. If there's no option of enucleation, which is like taking the eyeball out, or if they're just not a good candidate, again, I don't want them to be painful for the rest of their life either. Like imagine just having like a really painful eye, living with that. Like I'm assuming horses probably get like sinus pressure and headaches, but I mean, I have no clue how you would test for that. But like same thing with humans, like eyeball stuff hurts a lot. So if I can't keep these eyeballs comfy, I either take them out if I can, or again, I have another conversation with the owners, like this is not fair to the horse. And a lot of owners are understanding, like they don't want pain for the horse and stuff like that. We have like some chronic neuro conditions, especially like your sidewinder horses that kind of do like the crab walk. They're comfy until they're not. And we don't have like a full understanding of why horses do this. But I have also seen the worst side of things where these horses, like they get so bad, they just start spinning in circles. Again, is that fair to the horse? Absolutely not. And again, like I talked about this earlier, is like your EOTRH, like the incisor disease, that's painful. I think it can be another conversation with the ERTRH is a lot of owners can be pretty resistant to taking incisors out of their horses. One, because they don't think they can live without their incisors. Two, typically these horses are older and it's a pretty good surgery, but I mean, it takes probably at least a couple, 2, 3, 4 hours to do. It's a standing surgery for most of them. And then I think like a lot of the mentality with owners can be like, oh, they're so old right now. Like they could just die tomorrow. Well, then we make that happen. Like they shouldn't have to go through pain for the rest of their life just because they are old. Like that's not fair to them. So quality of life is very important. And you can have that talk with your vet anytime. Like you can do it in an appointment. You can call them on the phone. I've had plenty of owners just call me because they're nervous about talking at an appointment in front of other people, which is completely understandable. It's a very sensitive topic. I do think in the veterinary community, we are fortunate to be able to euthanize animals just because we can prevent suffering. And euthanasia is a whole nother talk and how peaceful we want horses to go. I always have these conversations with the owners before we do anything. Most unpredictable part is them laying down. So some owners don't want to be present for that, and that is completely fine as well. But I think having like a really good relationship with your vet and understanding what you think a good quality of life for your horse is. And you might also, with the owners, they might also overlook things that I would say this is not a good quality of life. And they just don't know. Like the owners are just like not educated enough to know that this is not normal for the horse. This is not an appropriate situation for the horse. We need to kind of have that conversation sooner rather than later about what we're going to do with the horses. And then I would say fall time is a really tough time for equine vets in general, because the last thing owners want for their horses, especially the ones that have arthritis, difficulty getting up, rolling, slipping on ice, is the last thing they want is their horse to be down and stuck and have to make that decision then. So we do have a lot of fall time euthanasias. And so they'll give them a great summer, knowing this is probably going to be their last summer. And in the fall, we pick a good day and we euthanize them. So we don't have to have the horse stress, the owner stress. If they go down in the snow, of course, like this is all like relative to like your geography, because I live in the Northeast. But those are really sad to do, like the down horses, and the horses are struggling. They're really tough. The owners are struggling. But I think kind of knowing your horse too. And then I've definitely had like fall euthanasias cancel because they kind of do like a rebound. And we hope that they make it through the winter and a lot will do. And then some we're kind of like, we probably should have done this. But of course, I don't have a crystal ball to tell you. But again, I would rather euthanize a horse on a happy day. As sad as it is, I think it's just a lot more peaceful for the owners and the horse knowing this was peaceful. It's sunny out. They were grazing. Like, and you can have like these horses that are chronic laminitis and you're like, this is going to be their day, is what it is. They're out in a field eating grass for the rest of like their days. Like, it is what it is. That is good for them. But like, it's a means to an end, unfortunately. But I think the most important things is make a list of things that you think are important qualities to have for the horse and what you think makes them have a good quality of life. And then start making a calendar if you feel like they're having good and bad days. And if they have, again, more bad days than good, I think it's more we kind of have to push this up a little bit further just because they shouldn't have more bad days than good. And that could take years too. Like, you can, it's fine. But yeah, those are my big ones as far as end of life decisions for horses. It's a really sad topic, but I think it's a necessary topic no matter what. Yeah.
I love the idea of the calendar because I think, I mean, it's a difficult decision to make. It's hard to make any decisions, especially when it's so emotional. But I like the calendar because you can see very clearly mm-hmm. what's going on. And, you know, because you might remember something differently that happened a couple of weeks ago. Or, mm-hmm. you know, you might see him looking great this morning and not great the next morning. So I really like that idea. It helps you to make a difficult decision maybe a little bit easier.
Yeah. And it's just like a visual reminder, too. You could even put on the calendar, like, happy face, sad face. And you're like, oh. And like, of course, like we always forget, like, especially with good days, you always kind of forget about the bad days, you know, because you're oh, yay. But then you're like, oh, but this bad day was a really bad day. So, of course, like good always outweighs the bad. But once you start seeing like more sad faces on the calendar, you're like, is this fair to them? You know, it's really tough and it's really sad.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
That's all the time we have for today, but it's been great talking with you, and I hope that this information has helped our senior horse owners or horse owners who will have a senior horse in the future.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. That was a blast.
Yeah, of course. And thank you all for listening today. Please remember to like this podcast, subscribe, leave a review, and recommend the Stable Management Podcast to a friend.